It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hey, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, tackling's kind of a difficult subject this week. Seems to be all the rage these days. Gender dysphoria, or otherwise known as transgenderism, and the whole movement to that, really how it's affecting young people even. You want to kind of get into this subject this week. What's going on with gender dysphoria, or as we see so often, transgender?
Yeah, so what we're going to talk about the history of this, and probably we're going to be doing probably at least two shows on this. So if you're listening here, or if you missed part of this, of course, this will be as a podcast at BibleBasedCounselor.com so that you can hear it if you have to step out or you can't listen to the whole show or you're in your car or whatever. Not going to be able to listen to it all. You can get back to it in the podcast, but it could be two shows, could be more. Okay. There's a lot of material, not dragging it out. So first of all, I want to talk about the history of it. We also want to talk about kind of the reality of the dynamic. I also want to talk about where we are biblically, because we're beginning to see, and we will continue to see, these people coming into church congregations, and we want to understand that too. What is the role? What do we do as Christians in this situation? And a lot of these people are either born again after they have these issues, they're coming out of these issues. How do we make sense of that? And then there are people who are Christians or have been raised Christians, and they're actually being taken into this movement.
And this has become more than just cross-dressing now. You can actually physically change yourself through mm-hmm. operations and hormone therapy, and it's happening at younger and younger ages. So it's a very, very serious issue.
And it's very culture-driven. I've heard of one situation where in hospitals here in the Seattle area where a person couldn't get a liver transplant because he or she hadn't been vaccinated, didn't want to get vaccinated because the fever spike would put off, if they had a fever spike, that would put off the operation. They needed the liver. They couldn't get the transplant, but a person that wanted gender reassignment surgery could get that surgery even though they weren't vaccinated. Because a psychiatrist or doctor said that it was necessary. So we see the twist in culture.
So a liver transplant takes lower precedence to some person trying to change their gender.
Yeah. It's so you see how twisted it can be. Mm. Well, the history of this, used to be gender dysphoria is a fairly recent term. We see it in the DSM-5. That's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, and it's edition 5. So that's a relatively recent term. The term before that was gender identity disorder. So you see the difference, how the term disorder has been dropped. This gender identity disorder was coined in the mid-70s. During an aggressive and at times a violent takeover of the APA by a small gay minority, a book entitled Destructive Trends in Mental Health, written by a number of doctors, most of whom didn't want to be identified because of being attacked by the APA or not published, blackballed by the APA.
What's the APA?
That's the American Psychiatric Association. Okay. Big, powerful lobbying group. But back in around, I think it was like 1974, they had a national conference in San Francisco, and it was physically and violently taken over. But when I say violently, I mean stomping on desks, grabbing bullhorns and yelling the microphones and threatening letters and by a small minority of gay—
Throwing a fit.
Throwing a fit. And of course, the rest of the population of that conference, being polite and reasonable, said, you know, let them have their way. It's probably not a big deal. And here we are today, totally flipping terms and all kinds of things. So it's very much driven by that. That's when they had the purpose of that term, gender identity disorder. The object of that was to legitimize transvestite lifestyles. Later, the word disorder was removed, and then this new term, gender dysphoria, in the DSM-5 became fashionable. You know, so this happens a lot with the APA. Now we see this. The APA wants to push a medical or social or political agenda, for example, legitimizing a certain offensive behavior. They'll coin a desirable name for this target behavior. As we see, they've called this gender dysphoria, which is a desirable name for what used to be transvestite or gender identity disorder. And so they'll coin this new term, and then they'll retrofit it to make it appear as though the term fits a status that's always existed. And so that's one way of normalizing the condition that they're trying to normalize. This is a method of redefining terms. It has a way of conflating terms and including innocent behaviors with the targeted offensive behavior that the APA is trying to legitimize. And what results from that is an argument that since the targeted behavior, this offensive behavior that they're trying to legitimize, since it's now referred to in the same class as innocent behaviors, the targeted behavior must also be innocent. Perfect example of that is this idea of what they call gender dysphoria now, and I was working with the person that identified with this for themselves, and then this was a young woman, and when we started to discuss what do you mean by gender dysphoria, it turned out to be this is what we used to call a tomboy. And this is a gal who wants to drive a tractor or a bulldozer or and is more comfortable in jeans than in –
like sports.
Yeah, yeah, and that kind of thing. Mm. So we used to call this tomboy. Well, by this conflation of terms, they've taken this innocent behavior into the same class as the transvestite, transsexual. And so they've got these so now, since this idea of gals wanting to drive tractors and play sports is pretty common, then so must the transgender transvestite situation. The onset of gender dysphoria is almost entirely around the adolescent years. That's what you find. Around 10 years old, you know, a little bit earlier, a little bit later, but average is around 10 years.
A little bit before
old.
Puberty.
Right, yeah, just right going into the threshold of puberty. And this is the age when every young person is waking up sexually and feeling uncomfortable with self-image. I mean, junior high years are the most horrendous years, and probably more so for girls than for boys. You know, one of the things that I became aware of, I was told in going through the schooling for the master's degree in studying abnormal psychology. And one of the tests that they give, I had to take it to become a counselor. I think, I don't know if police officers take it, but certain people in certain trades are required to take it. Felons that go to prison are required to take this test, and it's called the Minnesota Multiple Personality Inventory, MMPI. And it's a very robust, hundreds of questions and seven different ways to catch you if you're faking. You can't fake this test. And they won't give it to a teenage girl. They won't give it to a teenage girl because they would all the test would show them all psychotic. And the reason is because during those years, those are such traumatic years for young girls. The insecurities, the dramatic changes in their hormones, and it's just so. So this is an age where this is pretty common for people in this age to feel uncomfortable about their image. That's natural. Unfortunately, though, what we see is the political psychology has been has us believing that this age-appropriate emotional condition is now renamed gender dysphoria is grouped together with transgender, transvestite.
But there does seem to be some legitimate people who, even at a young age, they think they're a boy and they think they're a girl or vice versa. But what seems to have taken over with social media and all these other things, it's kind of become kind of a religion, kind of a group thing going on. And I want to be just like my friend, you know, and it's not based on, I never thought I was a girl before, but my friend is into it, or I'm seeing this on social media. Yeah. So it's almost like a cult or something going on that just kind of sweeps up people into this this way of thinking.
When you think of at that age,
it's kind of
any
a fad.
Age, really. Yeah, and you think of that age, though. At that age, we're very impressionable. You know, that's where if people want to start a revolution, they start it with young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's rebellion is bound up in the heart of a child.
Yeah.
You know, there's a rebellious streak in children. You know, we're getting all these rules and regulations from parents and teachers and pastors and police, et cetera, and you know, we get to a certain age and we want to break out of that. And what a powerful way to break out! Now,
well, yeah, that's
you
like
can name your own gender.
Yeah, the ultimate rebellion. I was made a girl, but I want, but I'm really a boy.
Yeah,
I mean,
way to confound your parents and your.
That seems to be more what it's about than anything. It's about rebellion.
Yeah,
rebellion
about,
against God. Too.
It's about rebellion. Mm-hmm. I think rebellion is obviously tied in with shame, and so even if you're wrong. You know, we've talked about in shows previously the psychology of belief. Even if you're wrong in a thing, if your concept of that is neurologically tied to certain neurotransmitters, I call it a neurological cocktail. If you get a rush of adrenaline or dopamine, adrenaline or whatever, by being in the company of people, what they say has less to do with whether it's true or not, or than it has to do with the kind of neurology that it generates. And you know, even you know, you can believe truth out of fear, and not without maybe even completely understanding that it can be true, and you can embrace it out of fear, or it can be false, and you can embrace it out of fear. Yeah, where's the problem coming from? When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more about, you know, where's the problem coming? Why the unrest, and why did we move in this direction? Aren't there other ways to rebel? Why is this one so popular now?
You know. Okay, so if you're listening today, maybe you have a family member struggling with these issues, and you would like some help and some advice, some counsel. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
The phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Also, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. People also email me through the website. If you do email, would you please include your phone number? Sometimes emails bounce and don't get delivered. Also doing Skype counseling at this time as well.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with a word regarding the many faces of anger. The key to managing anger is to recognize it when it doesn't look like anger. Otherwise, we find ourselves resisting anger when it wears one face, but then embracing it when it wears another. From personal experience and professional training, I understand this. I can help you recognize the faces of anger and teach you tools of effective management. Contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, or call 425-778-6169.
Hello, this is Daniel Pryor, host of the Sound Mind broadcast show here on KCIS. Right now, I'm doing a lot of Skype counseling, and this is a great way to get counseling in this time. So if that interests you, give me a call at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169, or contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel taking on a difficult subject this week that seems to be getting a lot of attention. And that's the gender dysphoria issue, transgender. Maybe you have somebody in your family who is transitioning, as they say. And what are you to think of this? How can you help? Daniel, continue with this.
Yeah. So we kind of did the history in the first part of the show. We did a little bit of the history of the diagnosis of gender dysphoria and kind of what that really was. If you've missed part of the show, these are at the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. You can find them in the podcasts there, so you'll be able to catch the whole show. So where does the problem come from, as I said before the break? Why are we going in this particular direction? There's quite a bit to discuss here, so it's not a quick answer. But, you know, I've heard people with these kinds of issues ask the question, why was I born this way instead of that way? One gal that I've been working with for some time asking, you know, why did God make me lesbian? Now, these are questions. It sounds maybe like a childish question, but these are questions that when we get later on in this discussion, which may be this week or next week, but when we get later on, we're going to talk about the fact that parents have to have answers to these kinds of questions. We can't just blow these questions off, because the people at the public schools and the people in the media and the people making movies are not blowing these things off. They're creating a reality. Mm-hmm. So Christian parents have got to be right on it and knowledgeable about these things. So the real question, though, why was I born this way instead of that way? The real question would be, why am I dissatisfied with the way I was born? Where did this dissatisfaction come from? Mm. You know, who am I really? Who am I trying to be? That's where the frustration is. Am I trying to be something that I'm not? And why am I trying to be something that I'm not? Where's the frustration coming from? Well, the basic problem is shame, lack of self-worth. This comes naturally when kids are entering into puberty. The physical body is an important aspect of personal worth, particularly at that age. All kinds of comparisons are going on. And today, that vulnerable population of early adolescence and moving into puberty, that population is being targeted, deliberately and specifically targeted. We want to talk a little bit about why. One aspect, as we mentioned earlier in the show, there are the more common to that age group, the idea of like the girl would be the tomboy, or the boy would be, you know, a guy who's, you know, not really a rough and tumble team sport or kind of guy. He's more
likes to paint,
play chess.
Cook.
Yeah, I play chess, and I'm a rough and tumble guy. So just because you play chess doesn't mean. But cook. Yeah, you know, I like to do that too. But you look at those things and you say, well, there's not a problem with those things. People grow out of the girl grows. She either gets used to being a tomboy, or she grows out of the idea that I never want to wear a dress, or she kind of grows out of that, the awkwardness. We have acne when we're in junior high, and we grow out of that, and then we have better self-esteem because we don't have acne anymore. Similar things like that. Mm. But then there are these other aspects that people suffer more deeply about, and deeper shame, more significant lack of self-worth, and so we run into this thing of what is becoming like raising its head now. This whole idea of gender reassignment surgery is a very drastic step, but yeah. I think it's something that is more and more on the minds of young people who are going through these difficulties, because the culture is presenting this as a real option.
Yeah,
and so probably for different ages, this might seem attractive for different reasons. So for young people, it must offer just an amazingly powerful feeling of power to think that with or without your parents' permission, you can just completely change the entire path of your life. Mm. I mean, how exciting is that? This might be promoted in some of the games that have been kind of on the market for decades now, where you increasingly are more living life more virtually. I was listening to something last night about the Japanese culture, where and the churches in the Japanese culture, where they are either very, very liberal churches or else they are very, very fundamental churches. There's no, so to speak, move of the spirit in Japan. And they were talking about the youth move, the youth in Japan. The speaker said, you don't see them on the streets during the day. They're sleeping. They're awake at night on the internet, playing games and communicating. They're not out in the so we see this kind of a move here, a move in the youth to get them less connected, living virtually, and adopting, you know, you have these games that they play, you know, globally, staying up all night playing globally, and you create your own image. You can create any image you want. And the idea of making that real, I can change my own physical body just like I could change this character that I am.
Your avatar.
Yeah, yeah. So I can change my physical body and I can live out a fantasy. So we have this kind of an idea. That's what it must feel like maybe for younger people. For mature adults, probably as well as young people, but for mature adults, it would probably be more of a hopelessness, a self-loathing, likely has roots in some sort of extreme childhood abuse. That's what we hear so much when we have adults that are doing these kinds of taking these kinds of drastic measures to change. It's just such a deep self-loathing force. And again, I say, more often than not, traced back to severe abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, rejection as a child.
But this is like this is another step beyond just homosexuality. The transgender thing. It's it's not really about being, it's not a homosexual issue. It's I want to completely flip.
Yeah.
Flip my sex.
Yeah, and that's the to me that's the depth of the loathing. Yeah, it's hard to believe. How do I imagine how somebody like Bruce Jenner, who was so successful, could loathe himself to the place where he didn't want to be male anymore? So, but I don't know much about his life growing up. But when I hear the testimonies of people who have had these reassignment surgeries and then become Christians later. And they sharing their past, and some of the abuse is unimaginable.
Well, there's a whole movement too to what they say, what they call a detransition. There was a big show, 60 Minutes did a bit. All these people who've made this radical surgeries on their life, and then they realize they made a mistake, and now they can't go back. And that's a dilemma.
Yeah,
you know, and it contributes to quite a bit of sadness and depression. Yeah, it's and this being foisted on young people and letting them make these decisions that are irreversible about their body is just it's even a form of child abuse, I think, particularly when parents encourage this.
Yeah, well, parents, by what definition? It's, you know, obviously they're certainly
they think they're
not
doing something to help their child, but
well, and I've even seen when some of these parents talk about their children going down these paths that there's almost a certain pride that the parent has in that, my child is way out there, you know.
That's why I say this is like a disorder that's taken on the entire culture, you know. It's like a religion.
Yeah, and so we'll get into that. So that's the and at the root of this, as one person said, I just want to love myself. I want to love myself. Now, we talked about loving myself last week, and how does that even make any sense? But this loving of self, I think this is what the gay pride movement is all about. And it's really then, so it's really actually gay shame. It's actually a shame cloaked in collectivism. That is, because there are so many of us, we can be bold about our condition. It's like the kind of the saying of that in a village of blind people, it's the seeing man who's the outcast. Mm. You know, so if it, it doesn't matter how wrong we are. If there's enough of us, there's comfort in numbers. LGBT objective is really on the surface of it is to escape a deep sense of shame, ironically by flaunting it. You know, creating and conflating terms to artificially increase the numbers and sort of insulate their status. So I believe that's where we have to stop.
Take a break for this week. So obviously a big subject. We'll continue this discussion next week. If people are listening today, maybe they have a loved one who is talking this way, that they want to transition. They need help. They need to ask questions. Daniel, you can provide some help and hope in this area. How do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 778-6169. Also, these shows will be on podcast at BibleBasedCounselor.com, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds, and also doing Skype counseling.
Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.